Hi. So the title of my presentation is Does Gender-Related Power Imbalance Link Early Violence Exposure to HIV Risk Among African-American Women? I'm presenting on behalf of my colleagues. Helen Wilson, who, as Jerry mentioned, recently had two beautiful twins. She's actually the PI for the study from which these data immediately come from. And Aaron Wilson and Jerry Donenberg, who is the Chicago site PI. I have no relationships to disclose. So Jerry did a beautiful job of pretty much laying the foundation in regards to sexual risk among young African American women. And just some points I'll highlight. The CDC reported a few years ago that AIDS and HIV among young African American women is estimated to be about 11 times that for their young white counterparts. Rates of STI, particularly gonorrhea and chlamydia, are highest among this age group of 15 to 24-year-olds. In a study published in 2009 by the CDC, 44% of African-American girls were infected with an STI. And we're beginning to, you know, see a similar trend in some of the research that we're doing here locally, where there are high rates of STIs among our African-American young girls. In terms of other sexual risk behaviors, African-American girls are more likely than their white and Hispanic peers to have reported sexual activity, have early sexual debut, and multiple sex partners. One of the things that we wanted to explore were relationships among young people and from a trauma-informed perspective. And we focused on intimate partner violence and found that IPV, which is what I'll refer to it moving forward, peaks in young women around age 16 to 24. Low-income women tend to be at a heightened risk for IPV, and African-American women in particular tend to report higher rates of victimization of IPV when compared to their Hispanic and white peers. So there are some social circumstances that further complicate the situation in terms of SES and living in urban areas. There was a critical narrative review that Dr. Seth DiClemente and Lowen conducted recently, where they were reviewing the literature on intimate partner violence and risky sexual behavior among adolescents 14 to 24. And what their review indicated was that inconsistent condom use, STIs, early sexual debut, having multiple partners, and other STI associated risk factors were prevalent among adolescents. And the thing is, what they also discovered in this review is that much of the HIV and STI interventions that focus or target female adolescents often focus on increasing behavioral and cognitive skills, such as condom negotiation, as an example. But when we're talking about the context of an abusive romantic relationship, some of those skills could increase their risk of violence in this context. So we're wanting to point out how intimate partner violence is related to risky sexual behavior. This is a slide that we've included in other presentations to sort of point out what we all know is that rates of violence are increasingly high here in Chicago. There was an article published in 2014 about young people who are living with and dying by street violence. And the authors found that between 2008 and 2012, nearly half of Chicago's homicides were under the age of 25. And that came out to be about 1,100. And this number is, you know, steadily increasing. Of the young people who have been murdered, nearly 500 of them were 18 or younger. Many of them were living in predominantly Black or Hispanic neighborhoods, and that doesn't consider the people who may not have been murdered, but they were still victims of, meaning shot at or witnessed and things like that. So what we're pointing out here is this notion of early exposure to violence and how that is, you know, related to sexual risk. So the theoretical framework that we're using is largely based on the theory of gender and power, but we also consider ecological and developmental frameworks. And so the larger study, which I'll talk a little bit more in depth in a second, was developed to assess how early exposure to violence is related to unsafe sex and dating violence among late adolescent African American women. So what you see here are basically what that theoretical framework suggests, but we're going to focus our attention primarily on gender-based power imbalance and how that mediates the relationship between early exposure to violence and sexual risk. So what's unique about our sample is that it's actually a seventh time point of data collection for these particular young women. Jerry's going to talk about a study that from which these young women were recruited from, the original Girl Talk study. But we developed a study called Girl Talk, We Talk, because we wanted to, as I've mentioned, the purpose of the study, but in addition to looking at these relationships, we also wanted to pull in their romantic partners. So the We Talk part sort of gets at where they are developmentally as young adults and their relationships with romantic partners. So our sample at the time these analyses were conducted was 118 African-American late adolescent women who were recruited from the Girl Talk study. And they also participated in a subsequent study called the Family and Neighborhood Experiences Study, which primarily focused on trauma experiences. They were recruited from some local mental health clinics here in Chicago. The average age was about 21, and about 80% were low income. So here's an overview of the study design, where waves 1 through 5 are from the original Girl Talk study. The FAN study that I described was wave 6, and so we're focusing here on wave 7. What's unique also about this particular time point is that we also collected biological data, tests for STIs. We also collected saliva, which I won't be presenting here, but the point of that was for us to assess how their body responds to a stressor. So there's some really interesting things coming out of this particular wave of data. So the measures that we used, the majority of them were collected at wave 7. Our dependent variable is what we're calling sexual risk, which is defined by self-reports of multiple partners, having sex while using drugs or alcohol, and condom use while using drugs and alcohol. That is our dependent variable. Predictors included power and attitudes and relationships, which is a measure that is assessing power distributions between men and women in heterosexual intimate relationships. Silencing the self, which has to do with suppressing one's expression to avoid conflict or the loss of a partner. And I'll describe how we use these variables to create gender-based power imbalance. A couple of others that were included was a subscale of a larger scale. The larger scale was called the African-American Male Shortage Scale. We used a subscale of African-American importance, which basically just says it's important to have an African-American romantic partner in my life. For dating violence, we used the revised conflict tactics scale, where we were measuring physical abuse in the past year, which includes victimization and perpetration in relationships with up to 2 specific partners. And then violence exposure, we used the lifetime trauma and victimization history. And again, that was measured during wave 6, where we're assessing any exposure to physical, sexual, or or witness violence during childhood and adolescence. So for the analytics for this study, I conducted a structural equation model, along with that were the confirmatory factor analyses. The two latent variables for this model were sexual risk, which is how I described it earlier, and gender-based power imbalance, which we use the power and attitudes and relationship scale, the subscale of the importance of having an African-American partner, and silencing the self. And this was a mediated path model. So this is the path model. And what you will see here is that there was a positive association between early exposure to violence and dating violence, which is what we expected. The association between early violence exposure and gender-based power imbalance, however, was not statistically related. Also, we found that there was no statistically significant association between gender-based power imbalance and sexual risk. However, what we do acknowledge is that we observed a trend here, though it did not reach significance at the 0.05 level, its p-value was exactly 0.06. So I'll talk more about what that could potentially mean. The path from early violence exposure and sexual risk was not significantly related to our outcome variable. We did find a positive association between dating violence and sexual risk, which is to be expected. So I also conducted an analysis to assess the indirect effects. Since there is a positive association between early exposure to violence and dating violence, and there's also a positive association between dating violence and the outcome, it made sense to assess any indirect effect of early exposure on sexual risk via dating violence, and it did have a positive association with a beta coefficient of 0.05 at the 0.05 significant level. So also we see, as far as the model fit statistics, the CFI and the TLI are rather good. The RMSEA is also good. We have an R-square of 0.18, which sort of suggests that this full model explains about 18% of the variability in sexual risk. In conclusion, I think one of the take homes is that although we didn't see a positive relationship between gender-based power imbalance as we'd hoped with the outcome variable, it approached significance, which means that perhaps we should look at it a little bit more closely. And one of the things I wonder is, how might we measure that differently? There are a slew of variables that perhaps may capture it differently, and it may even be something that we might want to consider developing on our own. But the context is another thing I want to point out, is that the context of romantic relationships is quite critical. I think adolescence is almost just as important as the formative years. And in a previous talk that we just heard, is that maybe intervening before intimate partner violence occur is what we might want to do. Therefore, going and looking more into peer relationships in terms of how young people navigate their courtships with friends, because oftentimes those are the relationships that develop into romantic relationships. So our findings sort of support this cycle, unfortunately, of persisting violence into young adulthood, where early exposure to violence leads to dating violence, thus leading to sexual risk. So I think examining some of the contextual factors that are related to gender power imbalance is definitely needed. Contextual factors such as, you know, the shortage of partners, understanding what romantic partners, romantic relationships mean. We found in other studies that young people have some difficulty even understanding their own emotions. Again, back to this whole developmental time in their life. So this is certainly something that I think warrants more more attention. That's pretty much all I have. These are my acknowledgments. Again, I mentioned Jerry Donnenberg is the UIC PI, Aaron Emerson and myself. I was the project director from this study. Our site PI, I'm sorry, the lead PI is Helen Wilson at Stanford. As you can see, there are a host of people who have been involved in this study. And this is not just for the Girl Talk, We Talk study. These are people who were involved in the original Girl Talk study from the beginning. And these are the grants that helped to support this research. And we certainly thank all of the participants who have been coming back over the years, which Jerry's going to talk about shortly. So, thank you.